Hi there, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. My name is Lee Mottershead, and before we crack on with this week's show, this is Safer Gambling Week, and everyone here at The Racing Post is proud and pleased to support it. We all enjoy having a bet on this programme, but it wouldn't be a pleasurable pastime if we weren't betting safely and responsibly. This is a great week to talk about your gambling, to think about your gambling, and to consider all the tools that will help you to gamble more safely and more responsibly. Four key messages to get across in this week are that it's good to set yourself limits, it's good to take a break. Gambling is not a way to make money, and friends and family are far more important than gambling. For more information on all the above, visit safergamblinguk.org. Lots to discuss in this week's programme. Discussing those things with me are our senior reporter Chris Cook and our West Country correspondent James Stevens, who's at his home in Cheltenham. And James, we're going to start with you because there's lots to discuss from the three-day November meeting at Cheltenham.
Yeah, loads to discuss, as you'd expect. It's Cheltenham's biggest meeting outside the Cheltenham Festival. But I suppose the big talking point and the place we have to start is an event which happened before racing started, which was the launch of the Jockey Cup. Me and you were there for a launch event on Friday morning, Lee. A £1.5 million new innovation by Flutter Entertainment, and working with ITV Racing especially, essentially giving the opportunity for jockeys to win a serious amount of cash, £500,000 at a winning jockey. So how it works is jockeys will compete in ITV races, as they were going to do anyway, and the points are distributed for first, second, third and fourth place finishes. At the end of the Grand National Day, when all is done, the winning jockey will receive that £500,000. But it's not just about rewarding jockeys. This is seen as a massive innovation into building the jockeys up more as stars and as big names. We've discussed the appearance of jockeys on the show since The Front Page really has started, from the days of Frankie Dettori and who will replace him, all the way through to the big names of the present and making sure that they reach a wider audience. Paddy Power himself was at the launch and said that jockeys are the constant. Trainers appear, owners appear, horses appear at all the meetings, but the jockeys are always the same. It's always those big names you see on the Saturday, and making them more familiar was absolutely fundamental to why this big investment is being put through. The ROA, Racehorse Owners Association, were unhappy about it because the owners aren't really being rewarded in the same way that the jockeys are. However, Paddy Power came back and said, well, there's a bigger picture here. This is about jockeys. This is about making sure they're the real stars. And the jockeys, too, seem excited, as you might expect, for a bit of a good payday. But Nico de Boinville said they're ready to do some heavy lifting to ensure that the public gets to know them, gets warm to them. So on the whole, the Jockey Cup was met with great reception, and it's exciting. And then, yeah, let's go through the track. I mean, we had 3 days of decent quality racing by Cheltenham standards. Friday's highlight for me was John Bond. The big, exciting two-mile chase. We didn't get to see him at the Cheltenham Festival. He was back in the Schlur Chase, won perhaps by less of a winning advantage people were expecting, but a slick, good return to jumps, and he'll go off to the Tingle Creek next. Saturday's big race was the Paddy Power Gold Cup. It centred around Ginny's Destiny, the big horse for Paul Nicholls, but it was the Sable second string, Il Redota, who won. A huge winner for Freddie Gingell, the rising star. I've called him before the Luke Littler of the racing world. Possibly a bit of a stretch, but another cracking ride for him. And he's continuing to charge towards the champion conditionals title. And then finally we go on to Sunday, where it was a really, really tough day. Probably the toughest day I've had on a race course, actually. We had a very, very good performance from a Buffalo Soldier. Jumped as well as any horse you'll ever see jump around Cheltenham. But moments after the race, the horse suffered a heart attack and collapsed and died. Bangers and Cash, a really popular horse for Ben Pauling up here in Cheltenham. He also sustained an injury, and we also had a fatal fall for Napatandi in the Greatwood. Burdett Road won the Greatwood. Great performance and continued a great run by James Owen. But the mood at Cheltenham yesterday, it was really tough, and people left racing after it happened. It was announced over the tannoy, which we've just discussed off air, is not always how racecourses choose to deal with the information. I'm sure people have different opinions on it. I personally quite I like the idea of transparency. If you've got nothing to hide and you don't want to seem to be hiding things, I certainly see the idea behind being open and honest with these things. Deaths are incredibly hard, but you do have to be open. But yeah, it was a tough day yesterday, but all in all, an exciting future for racing with the Jockey Cup. But yeah, thoughts definitely with all those connections. It was a hard day yesterday.
Yeah, it certainly was, and Chris, we'll discuss that. Before we do, if we look at the David Power Jockeys Cup, just cover that ends on the second day of the Grand National meeting, and it will run an every ITV race until then. Harry Cobden has come out over the weekend and said that for him, this will take priority over defending his champion jockey title, and you can understand why. With a £500,000 pot,
it's a very big number, isn't it?
It's an eye-watering sum, isn't it, really? I mean, I think looking at what he would have earned last year from his riding fees, etc., and prize money, this is double, pretty much, that. It's a colossal sum of money.
Yeah, okay.
What do we think about it?
I mean, more money for jockeys, I'm all in favour of that. In principle. And, you know, when we're talking about jump jockeys, you know, God knows they earn it. That sum of money is going to tend to go to somebody who's already a really big earner. You know, that's just the way these things are. But yeah, I can absolutely understand. I think probably if you hadn't been champion jockey, that might still be the first thing you want to aim at. And I saw Sean Bowen was quoted in today's story saying that, you know, that's still at the forefront of his thoughts, is becoming champion. And then that gives you status, isn't it? Once you've done it, that gives you the kind of status and the kind of contacts that will help you to maybe attack other ambitions, as Harry is thinking about doing this winter. It adds an extra bit of interest. You know, the people behind it are obviously hoping that, you know, relatively casual fans of the sport will be drawn into it more by, you know, following the league table and so on. We'll see if that works. I mean, other sort of league type contests in racing haven't necessarily worked all that well, but you know, I'm all in favour of trying something and innovation and bringing in a bit of fresh money.
Did you sympathise with the ROA, which seemed quite narked that the owners weren't involved and that the organisation had been given quite, as they saw it, late notice that this was happening?
To be honest, I thought that was unfortunate.
Their reaction or the fact
both of those things, really. Yeah, they ought to have been brought into the tent at a bit earlier stage, I suppose. But then, you know, when you find yourself in that situation, I think there must have been a more constructive response than putting out a public moan about why is this money going to other people when it should be coming to us. I don't know how effective that is going to be in winning sympathy for their cause. There must have been sort of better ways of having discussions behind the scenes about, look, you know, in the future, can we do this in a different way, in a better way, and can we please remember the needs of all owners? That didn't appeal to me the way that was handled.
No, and I think you can't get away from the fact that the jockeys are the prime. They are the
of course.
Only two sets of individuals take part in races. You've got the horses and the people riding them. They're the ones actually out on the track. So inevitably, as the horses can't talk, the jockeys are going to be the human stars of horse racing, the ones that are the most easiest to sell the sport through, and therefore they are the obvious vehicle for this sort of event.
I mean, one understands completely why the owners say, you know, we put in a huge amount and you've got to remember our needs. But in terms of star power, obviously the jockeys are the ones that people latch on to.
James, one thing that we probably shouldn't hide away from is that there's likely to be inevitability that this will be linked very closely to the second series of Champions Full Gallop. There hasn't been an announcement yet that there will be a second season. I think talks are still ongoing, but I know internally it's seen that this competition, which, don't forget, is being sponsored by Flutter, the same organisation that was the key driver behind the first season of Champions Full Gallop and will be involved in the second season. I think it's felt that this will be a narrative spine for the programme. Will it be a useful narrative spine in that sense?
Yeah, in many ways. I mean, back to what you've said, I mean, Cheltenham is famous for big gambles and stuff, and I have to say, this was the worst kept secret. It seems the worst kept secret, because everyone's talking about Champions Full Gallop Season 2 and no one's confirmed it. A lot of people mentioning it. We haven't had it confirmed, but the vibe on the ground is very much that this is the way. And I think the jockeys as a narrative is a huge part of it, because and it should be. Jockeys are the athletes in the way, as you've rightly said. They're the ones on the horse that they do the talking. But there's a lot of a theme of that documentary, and the sort of the ambition towards a racing documentary was the whole idea of a younger audience, something you've written about in your column today from being at the Melbourne Cup, and the racing's ability to attract a younger audience. And jockeys are a lot younger than trainers, so naturally people of a younger audience are more likely to be drawn to a Harry Cobden than a Paul Nicholls, just because of the age of Harry Cobden. These guys live incredibly unique lifestyles compared to the average person, whether it's the weight, the miles they do, how they earn their money, really. It's a completely different to most people. So they're quite fascinating individuals, and we got a little glimpse of their lives and a glimpse of their personalities. And, you know, I look at this investment and the money in, and yeah, I can completely understand why the owners perhaps feel they deserve a bit more recognition, and they should have been told about it before. But the jockeys are a really good avenue to draw people in. If you think about how racing has been successful in getting the mainstream media attention, a lot of it was Frankie. You know, Frankie was a huge name. Mm. Not many trainers have that same pull as a really successful jockey do, as Lester Piggott back in the day as well. I think it's a tried and tested model that jockeys are really have that pull. And the fact that they're on board, they can see this wider picture, is a huge positive. And that documentary, you know, it was the first year. There were some good bits. There were bits they need to improve on. This is already a natural way of looking at it. You're right. And I hope it's successful. The fact that they're going for a lot of money is a very easy narrative to sell as well. Like, sometimes the best stories are simplest. Harry Cobden is a very successful jockey, champion jockey. That's a life-changing amount of money for him. And all four of those jockeys who were at the launch event said it. If you're going for a life-changing amount of money, you're going to naturally have a lot of emotion in there. And essentially, they're investing in perhaps creating a lot more emotion from these jockeys, because there's so much more at stake. So yeah, I'm excited to see how it goes. And yeah, it's certainly going to add an extra of an intrigue, especially for those jockeys who perhaps aren't quite in that higher echelon. Someone like Jack Tudor, for instance, a fantastic young jockey coming through, he'll get a few opportunities on a Saturday. And for him, people of that standard, that could be the absolute moment they have to break through at the very top.
I was just going to say, have they explained why it's ending on the second day of the national meeting? Why wouldn't it include the most famous race of all?
They haven't, but my hunch would be they would realise that if they ended it on Grand National Day, the final race would be the Grand National. And I imagine ITV has got so much to do after the Grand National in talking about the Grand National,
yep,
that if this ended on the Grand National with a cliffhanger, it would get almost no coverage. So better to do it on the Friday, when you probably can shine more of a spotlight on it.
Yeah, I follow the logic.
You just don't agree with it, do you?
Well, it's going to strike some people as illogical, particularly yes, if somebody wins narrowly and then whoever was runner-up wins the national the next day. You know, that's going to seem weird. But I mean, but their compensation will be winning the national, I suppose.
And we start the Flat Jockeys Championship on Guineas Day, not Craven Day. So yeah, there's always sometimes questionable logic about all these things. Chris, in terms of the action on the track,
yep,
was there a particular performance over the 3 days that stood out to you?
I mean, there were a few sort of aiming at Cheltenham going forwards, but as our colleague David Jennings said in the paper, you know, when you're looking at the British runners and only a handful of Irish raiders, you're probably not seeing the sort of the full strength that we're going to get in the middle of March. Mm-hmm. I like Burdett Road, you know, he's obviously going places. And more broadly, you know, I'm just, you know, like many other punters, I've latched on to James Owen, yeah, who's having this extraordinary career. I mean, it's not even 2 years since he had his first winner in Britain. Mm. And he's a power to be reckoned with on the flat and in jumps racing. He had three runners at Cheltenham over the weekend, East India Dock and Burdett Road both won. Yeah. And the other was a 50-1 shot and a handicap that finished a close second. I think he led over the last. So, I mean, he's doing extraordinarily well. I was gutted for Tommy Bowe, though, you know, going the wrong way. I think he was still in front in the cross country at the time, and he was favourite. You know, like a lot of people out here, I just love that horse. And yeah, I felt very sorry for him. That's his first run at Cheltenham, and it's obviously ended badly. But, you know, maybe he can come back for the real thing at the festival in March. I think he's been quoted at 20 to 1. And Sweet David, who sort of won handsomely, is 10 to 1. People are expecting Stumptown and Galvin to be the most likely ones in that race.
Which is a handicap.
Indeed, probably not that many people thinking about the cross country four months in advance, but I do.
Good on you. Obviously, Sunday was a pretty horrible day. In many ways, with three fatalities, and of course, poor Buffalo Soldier dying after the race. We should say that post mortem will take place on the horses, so we can't be sure at this stage definitively what happened. But colossally sad. Heart goes out to all connections. Chris, I know as well you were very keen, understandably as well, to highlight the fact that there was an ITV News report on this in the main bulletin last night that, looking on social media, raised a lot of eyebrows.
Well, I mean, it was the social media discussion that sort of drew me to it, and then I sort of found it on the ITVX. Absolutely amazing report, about 2 minutes long. In the context of an overall bulletin, which I think was only sort of 10 or 12 minutes. It was like the third or fourth item on the main ITV News last night. And the sort of the journalistic value of that was hard to see. I mean, because, of course, as you say, you know, this is a story, it was the lead item on our website overnight. Yeah. And in our little world, you know, it's a very sad story. In the context of the wider world, when you've got wars happening and murders and just a long list of news items that they could have covered, it struck me as a really weird choice to have 2 minutes on horse racing right in the middle of that broadcast last night. And it wasn't as though there was some sort of fresh take on it, that, you know, they hadn't identified some common factor between the three unfortunate deaths. They weren't saying that anything had been done wrong, anything had been overlooked that might have caused this. Mm. And then, you know, towards the end of the report, they had someone from Animal Rising saying, you know, it's time we phased out horse racing, with no balancing response from anybody within the game, which was deeply strange. And, you know, frankly, shoddy. ITV, being the sports broadcast partner, would have had immediate access to anyone they wanted from within the sport. And I find it bizarre that they didn't, you know, even seek that, or didn't, you know, on camera put any challenge to the spokesperson from Animal Rising. You know, it didn't set their views in the context of, this is an animal rights organization which, you know, if God forbid they got power tomorrow, they'd be taking your pets away from you, we wouldn't be eating meat and that kind of stuff, you know, which would have allowed ITV's viewers to sort of successfully locate their views in context. It was just, you know, here's a responsible person calling for an end to horse racing. Deeply strange stuff. And then they also played, you know, footage of all three of the deaths. In the case of a Buffalo Soldier, they took it right up to the moment when he was obviously going to collapse, but hadn't quite. I would imagine there'd be a lot of concern within the sport, because, you know, it seemed like a report that you only run because you have that footage. And nearly the thinking behind it might be, you know, look at this shocking footage. Yeah. It was irresponsible and disrespectful in my view. I mean, it was very surprising to see it. And the question must be, you know, is ITV going to make similar use of any other footage that they happen to grab in the future covering this sport? So I would think there's going to be a lot of concern and backstage discussions along those lines, you know, wanting to know, you know, does the sport still have ITV's sympathy and support in the future? It was something to worry about.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I suspect there will be as much concern within the ITV racing team, having seen that, as there will be.
I imagine so, though, of course, they won't be able to talk about that. But it's very strange.
Yeah. Okay, that was our first story, looking back on the 3 days at Cheltenham. Before we move on to a big flat race that has taken place not that long ago, I want to direct you towards all the great benefits of the Racing Post Members Club. Welcome back. We move on now to story two. And you know what? We're talking again about the 2024 Cesarewitch, Chris Cook.
Oh, yes. It did come up again.
It did, didn't
I mean,
it?
I like the Cesarewitch. It's a bit strange to
be marathon.
Talking about it a month later. Because, of course, we remember that the winner, who was the winner on the day, very quickly emerged that the jockey may have used his whip 10 times.
Alphonse Legrand and Jamie Powell.
Yeah. Thank you. Filling in the gaps. Three days later, when the whip review committee sat, they duly disqualified Alphonse Legrand because disqualification becomes automatic if you use your whip four or more times more than the limit of six that's allowed in flat racing, yeah. Which Jamie Poe was adjudged to do. But they appealed and won at the end of last week on the grounds that, in fact, the last use of the whip had not made contact with the horse. And what came out from the hearing, I mean, I absolutely understand the reasoning behind the appeal being allowed. There is no definition under the rules for what is a whip use. And so it appears that the whip review committee have decided that, you know, the whips made some contact when not at the point where the jockey tried to use it for the 10th time. That appears to have been an air shot, as it had gone over the horse's bum, just because of the angle that the jockey was sitting at the time. But then as he brings the whip back to his side, it sort of rubs over the horse's backside. Not with any intent to make it go faster at that point, but it does make contact. In the appeal hearing last week, the BHA's representative argued that even if that was the only contact, that was enough. That counts as a whip use. The whip makes contact with a horse. That's the 10th time in the race. Ergo, disqualification. But the appeals panel didn't accept that at all. They said it won't be the case that any contact at all between whip and horse, when the jockey's hand is off the rein, that won't necessarily count as a whip use. This was an unavoidable contact, is how they described it, that was a sort of incidental part of him bringing the whip back to his side. Simon Crisford, who trained the runner-up in the Cesarewitch, who would otherwise have got the win if the winner was disqualified, he was saying, well, it's not unavoidable, is it? It's clearly not unavoidable. If the jockey hadn't tried to use his whip 10 times, that wouldn't have happened. He was urging clarity under the rules to the BHA, and you know, one can quite see his point. Fundamentally, all that people really want in racing is to know where they stand. If you know what the rules are, then you can comply with them. But now it seems that we've been looking in the wrong direction. The whip review committee has interpreted the rules one way and the appeals panel has interpreted them another. I think we need to hear from the BHA as to exactly what they mean by a whip use. And is this rationale that was expressed at the end of last week something that they espouse?
Just on that point, have we heard from the BHA since?
No, we haven't. But then what they will say is that they want to see the written reasons of the appeals panel before they put anything into the public domain. I mean, that's always been the way of it. And it's a sensible way to go about it. It just means that you've got to wait for a week and maybe sometimes 2 weeks for those written reasons to enter the public domain. And then we'll get a BHA response.
Having you sit in a lot of these hearings, were you, having sat through the 3 hours of this one, were you surprised that the appeals panel came to the judgment that it did?
It's not what I was expecting at all, because it's a sort of surprising, headline-grabbing outcome, and I didn't feel, just from sort of reading the runes during the hearing, that they were on the point of doing something that was going to surprise the audience, but they did. I understand the reasoning behind it. Yeah, it does make sense to me. The jockey, whether he wanted to or not, he did miss the horse when he was trying to hit it, and the subsequent contact with the whip was incidental. So if your definition of a whip use is, you know, he actually makes contact with the horse when he's trying to urge it forward, well, that's not what happened. So he only used it 9 times, so they don't disqualify. But an awful lot of people didn't think that was what the rule said. They thought, you know, contact is contact.
Yeah.
So as I say, yeah, there's an issue here that needs to be tidied up, and soon.
There is, James. When the this whip review committee was launched, we were told the great benefit of not taking decisions on the day, but having a panel that could really consider them in depth, was that we would get a more reasoned, considered decision. And yet, despite having had all that time to look at this whip use of Jamie Powell, the appeals panel has come to the conclusion that the whip review committee seemingly didn't interpret the final strike correctly. Does that place a question mark over the whole principle of having a whip review committee?
It does, because as you rightly say, clarity is important, and clearly this is discovered that there isn't quite clarity, and there's different ways you can interpret those rules. I look at the whole situation as racing's addition of VAR. You know, this is a whole thing where the sport can't seem to get to grips as to what they want and how it works and how to interpret it. I mean, Chris has sat on many of those appeals panels in the past, and you've got people, when you're appealing, you're looking for not necessarily a loophole, but just a way and a clear understanding. And this was a way where this wasn't. This case was a 10th hit. We're talking about intentions. We're talking about use. There aren't clear-cut definitions as to this was a hit of a whip, and it made the horse go faster, and this wasn't. You know, it's never ever going to be easy in racing, where you're dealing with animals and the participants, which can't really talk. After all, fundamentally, that's one of the key differences between any other sports. So understanding the clear guidelines is always going to be a challenge, and clarity in this situation has completely been thrown out of the water. In terms of decisions on the day, I mean, this is still such a huge hot topic. I mean, the Cesarewitch is a huge race; it's a massive betting race, and for punters of the second who thought they had then won the race, then they're walking away disappointed with the outcome. You're now getting people who have had the winner and they're disappointed with the outcome because they feel that they were right and it's had to go to appeal. Of course, they were probably quite surprised that it was appealed, in fairness. The whole situation is a complete mess, and it needs clarity, because otherwise we're just going to have this situation over and over again. It's not an easy thing to get right, but there just needs to be some clarity on this, because we're in a position where racing and whip use and all those sort of situations, things happen that you don't quite forecast. You know, it's not beyond the realms, though, that there was going to be a whip use and you're wondering, well, was that a use, was it not? This was something that was quite predictable, was possibly going to happen, and the fact that we've ended up here, it's not the biggest surprise in the world, is it? And it's important that you learn from these things and improve it, because we don't want to be going around in circles. And you discussed previously about the ITV bulletin and talk about racing's wider appeal. Under fatalities, whip use is something which is always talked about. And the more and more that we're reading about whip use, and the more and more that these stories are emerging, and that's not a good look for racing's image either.
Just one last thought on the story that strikes me is a sort of amazing coincidence of timing. The owners behind Alphonse Legrand got together in ownership in the first place because they kept going to Cheltenham's November meeting year after year. And then they got this right result on the Thursday, the night before they were all due to meet in Cheltenham. So it was sort of amazing timing for them to have a really good celebration. And they were with their trainer, Tony Martin, over the weekend as well, and he had a winner with Hamzian. Hamzian second to Alphonse Legrand in the Chester Plate back in May. Just another example of sort of flat form turning out to be really influential in jump racing, and Burdett Road would be another example this weekend. So it all tied together at various levels. You know,
like it was scripted.
Those guys were happy anyway. But I guess the punters who got paid on the day, have been justified because their horse ends up as the winner. I feel like backers of Manxman will still be beside themselves about what's happened.
But I'm sure they feel like Simon Crissard feels.
Yeah, exactly that. But here we go. A bit more clarity, and we'll all be merry and bright in the future, and the whip will never be a source of controversy ever again.
Do you know one thing there is clarity on?
Go on then.
We have clarity now on who will be the next chair of the BHA.
Oh, what a good link.
That's a segue, isn't it? This is our third story. So we found out on Wednesday that Lord Charles Allen, a Labour peer, will take over from Joe Saumarez Smith in the end of May next year as chair of the BHA and leader of the BHA board, which, don't forget, these days is in theory the sport's ultimate decision-making power. The nominations committee that appointed Charles Allen listed a number of reasons, spoke about a number of reasons why they had picked him. One reason they said was his extensive business background, and there's no doubt he has got an extensive business background. He's spoken about as an individual who is commercial to his core. He once ran ITV as chief executive of an organisation we've spoken about plenty on this programme already. The Noms Committee referenced the fact that Lord Allen has extensive experience of chairing organisations, and there's no doubt that that is also true. In fact, when he takes up the role next year, he will already be chairing a number of organisations, including list here, Balfour Beatty, e-commerce retailer THG. He is advisory chairman of global investment bank Moelis and Company, and he's chairman and trustee of the Invictus Games. So he's a man who is well averse to chairing complex organisations. And the Noms Committee also referenced the fact that he is a Labour peer, a Labour figure, at a time when we have a Labour government and the sport is needing to persuade that government on a number of fronts, including of the importance to reopen talks about levy reform and then hopefully for racing getting a successful outcome. That said, just how Labour a Labour peer Lord Allen is perhaps questionable. He held chairman and advisory roles under the leadership of Tony Blair and Ed Miliband. More recently, he's not been seen to be a Labour active figure, and until recently hadn't voted in the House of Lords for a long time. The Noms Committee also indicated that they had no concerns that Lord Allen does not come from within racing to the role, which was interesting because when the job spec went out for the BA chair role, candidates, potential candidates, were advised that the appointees were looking for someone who had an active knowledge of and passion for horse racing, which they said was critically important because of the sport's complex stakeholder relationships. Well, although Lord Allen says he enjoys horse riding, and has enjoyed horse racing, there's no real documented evidence that he is an avid follower of horse racing or had any involvement in the sport up to now. The nominations committee now clearly feel that is not a negative for him taking the role. Some even think it might be a positive, but will it also influence who the BHA selects as chief executive, a position and an appointment that Lord Allen will now clearly have a part in deciding? So, Chris Cook, Lord Charles Allen is the new BHA chair. Good appointment, yeah. Bad appointment, too soon to say.
Far too soon to say. I always worry with chair people coming into, you know, a role like this after a long and successful career is, you know, I hope to God this guy doesn't see it as a sort of way of buffering himself towards a quiet retirement. Because it might from the outside look like a fun job to have, you know. And that would explain, you know, slightly why we haven't heard from him before, you know, and now he sees himself sort of moving into sport, you know, stepping down a bit in terms of his level of business.
We should say he's actually already in sport through the Invictus Games and has been involved in sport. He was involved in the Commonwealth Games for Manchester and the London Olympics.
If he was deeply embedded in the sport and knew lots about it, we'd have heard about that, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So one can only assume that he's going to spend some time doing the rounds, meeting people, getting to know the sport, reading his way into it, which is fine. You know, there's absolutely a place for that. And the value of him to the wider sport is that he's a sort of very immensely knowledgeable, well-connected, influential person. Hopefully he does have that influence, as you say, on the current government, because, you know, God knows we need friends in corridors of power. I think it really does mean that then whoever's going to be chief exec of the BHA has to be somebody who already knows the sport inside out, because you can't have both of those guys being appointed and just having to sort of spend 6 months in Purdah, as it were, finding out about what it is that they're actually running. You know, my interpretation would be that, you know, we're much more likely now to get someone who's already been working in the sport for a number of years, rather than the sort of chief exec where you, you know, you reach for someone like Nick Coward, say, who's sort of new to the sport but has lots of the sort of skills that you would require. So I do think that kind of pushes them in a certain direction. That being said, you just sort of want them to get on with making that appointment, don't you? I mean, I don't know if you've heard anything about timetables, but it won't be all that long until the incumbent sort of reaches the end of her time and no. Still no news on who's next.
Well, that's it. And I wonder if that means we might potentially end up with a situation similar to one that has occurred within the Jockey Club, where they've appointed a former Jockey Club executive, Charlie Boss, to be interim chief executive because, although they didn't say this in the announcement, the individual that they had found for the chief executive's role, who currently will still be working in America, it seems, seemingly was offered the role, accepted the role, and then changed their mind about the role. That's what the rumour on the street is.
These things happen, don't
they?
Although you inevitably, you're left wondering if you've been sort of part of a salary negotiation when that happens. It's a pity that we need so many new leaders at once in racing, there's a lot of work to be done for the sport's sake. You hope that the right people get their feet under the desk soon enough.
One thing I would just say to finish off about the appointment of Lord Allen is that a lot of the work I've done this year on the governance of the sport and the way it's run has highlighted that the majority of stakeholders still seem to think that the massive problem within British racing governance is vested interest, is the fact that stakeholders do not leave their hats outside the door sufficiently well when discussing matters of key importance to the sport, and they don't take a long-term view, they take a more short-term view about what's in their own best interest, and that's what's in the best long-term interest of the sport. For that to change, I'm sure Joe Saunders-Smith has been working very hard on it. For that change, you need a very, very strong chair who will, in effect, force vested interests or force stakeholders to think in the long term. We don't know yet if Lord Allen will be that chair, or if he will be a chair that will be more easily persuaded by stakeholders that what they believe at all times is correct. We say too soon to say.
But how much strength can he hope to have in the initial discussions, though, when he's only just beginning to learn, presumably, about the interplay of racing politics? And I'm sure, like all incomers, he'll be shocked when he finds out just, you know, how riven we are with factions.
Well, one of the things I read about him did say that when he's looking at roles that he might consider taking as a chair, that he much prefers difficult, complicated roles than easy penalty kicks. Well, goodness me.
He's got his wish.
He's found one.
Good luck.
Okay, end of the show then. Before we finish, I need to identify this week's winning story. And we've spoken a lot about what's happened at Cheltenham over the weekend and the David Power Jockeys Cup. And for that reason, James Stevens, you are this week's winner. Congratulations, sir.
Thanks very much, Lee. I think that Melbourne Sun has certainly helped you out making the right decisions. So what can I say?
Well, and I hope you find some Tokyo sun, because, James, you're representing Racing Post in Japan this week, with the Japan Cup coming up on Sunday morning. Potentially a huge one as well for you, with Goliath and August Rodan in Tokyo.
Yeah, massive race. Goliath so brilliant in the King George. Could be a huge, exciting middle distance there. And August Rodan, the end of the career of Derby winner. See what he can do. But yes, very much looking forward to it, and loads of coverage on the Racing Post to look forward to.
Perfect. Well, James, thanks to you, thanks to Chris. And Chris, before we go, I have a little surprise. Couldn't this be a program called This Is Your Life?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is not that. But,
phew.
But a couple of months ago, Chris was successful in a prestigious industry award, the Press Gazette's Future of Media Awards. Chris was victorious in the Specialist Regional Newsletter of the Year category Front Runner, which hopefully, which I'm sure you all read. It is fantastic reading. Another good reason to be a member of the Racing Post Members Club. But Chris, you weren't able to accept your award on the day, were you?
I had to leave before they dished the trophy out.
Yes.
Mind you, in fairness, I didn't think I was going to win. You know, that was
well, you very much did win. And, sir, this
amazing.
Is your trophy.
Look at that. Thank you very much, Lee. That's brightened up my day.
Congratulations. Again, the Front Runner is superb. A great reason to be a member of the Racing Post Members Club. Thank you for watching this week's edition. We will be back next week. Until then, goodbye.